We're discussing, we're going to do a little bit about Metzorah, Tzaras. So Tzaras is sometimes known as leprosy, but it's not quite leprosy. It's basically, and the Rambam talks about this at length, and the Ramban, a lot of people, but basically say that it's a punishment which Hashem gives to a person for his sins, largely for Lashon Hara, okay? Largely for speaking Lashon Hara. And the idea is that Hashem wants to give a person, it doesn't exist nowadays, seemingly, but it's at a time where the Jewish people are at a high level, and people, if individuals would stray, Hashem, so to speak, gives them a reminder that they're straying, that they're involved in Lashon Hara, and hopefully they'll do teshuva, and they'll better their ways. So it starts, the way the Rambam describes it, is that it starts with your house. Okay, if a person's talking Lashon Hara, so he gets tzaras on his house. If that works, if he does teshuva, then great. If not, ultimately it leads to, after a few weeks, it leads to him destroying his house. Okay, they destroy it. And then, if that helps, great. If not, then he starts getting tzaras on his clothing. Okay, and then ultimately that leads to clothes getting destroyed. And if that works, great. If he still doesn't do teshuva, so then he gets tzaras on his body. He or her, or she. So it's not only men. So then he gets tzaras on your body. And then, ultimately where that eventuates, and if a person, it's still like, there's a process, it takes a few weeks, the Kohen checks it, and right, whatever. But ultimately, if the person still doesn't do teshuva, they're sent out of the camp. Okay? They have to go out of the city, and like be alone. Like excommunicated, if you will. And they stay there, basically, until the tzaras disappears. Now it's going to disappear, presumably, when Hashem removes the tzaras, which is when they do teshuva. Right? Okay. So we're just saying tzaras is the process. You get tzaras on your house, and then on your garments, and then on your body. Ultimately, you end up out of the camp if you don't do teshuva. And the Rambam, I think, describes it. What's the idea of sending the person out of the camp? So does anyone have any thought of that? Here's the Rambam who describes it. Oh.
Also, affects the people who are listening?
Yes.
So, would that be why?
Yeah, okay, good. You mean to keep him away from the other people?
People affecting others, yeah.
Wait, Miriam, is that you?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So, we just started 2 minutes ago. Basically, we're talking about tzaras. The person that talks Lashon Hara and gives them tzaras on their house, and then on their clothing, and then on their body. And ultimately, it's in order to get the person to do teshuva. But if they don't, then ultimately they're sent out of the camp. And we're just talking about why it is that you're sent out of the camp. So Heather's suggesting is, one of the things with Lashon Hara is that it affects other people. Because I'll say, you talk Lashon Hara, it affects three people. It affects you and the victim you're talking about, and then it's the person who hears it even the most. Which is interesting, that why it's them even the most. And on some level, perhaps, they don't realize it's affecting them, and that's where it's kind of most dangerous, when you know you kind of believe what the other person's saying and you don't realize, like, there's a certain guilt attached to the speaker of Lashon Hara, but this almost like you buy into it, but it's like a guilt-free type of a sin, so that allows it to take a stronger hold. Yeah, but that's a different discussion. No one. The point is that it affects people. It's destructive to society. People who speak gossip, they erode the values of the society, and it becomes all about competition, attacking other people, you know. So ultimately, one thing you got to do is get the person out of there. Okay, that person's a danger to society, right? Okay, good. Any other reason why you think that it would be valuable to send the person away?
I think for their own, they haven't been doing tshuva.
Yeah.
You can't be a part of society if you're not going to do that.
Yeah. Okay, good. So you're saying is they don't deserve to be part of society. You're saying for their own... Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't use those words.
Okay, exactly. What? You're saying for them, they can't
them
be part of society.
In order to learn, you know, and to realize, like, this is the consequence. You can't participate in society if you're going to be like this.
Okay, fine. You mean, and that will hopefully show
them.
That
will help them to do shiva.
Okay, good. So it's like just a bad punishment, if you will.
Yeah.
Like, would it be akin to, like, giving the malchus or something? Like, what?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think there are those. I think I got this in the Rambam, that there's another thing, which is that they cannot stop, right? They can't stop talking Lashon Hara. So there comes a point where you simply have to stop them, okay? You simply have to make it impossible for them to do. And if they're out of the camp and there's no one to talk to, well, then they're not going to be talking Lashon Hara because they have no one to talk to. So it would be like...
Practical.
Well, it's practical, but it's a step towards teshuva. Like, if, for example, a person who has a drug problem, okay? Mm-hmm. So a person with a drug problem, you deal with them on normal types of things. They go to support groups and things like that and whatever. But there comes a point where none of that is working. Then there's a point you have to put them in a rehab facility where they're simply not going to use drugs because they simply can't. They're in a place where there are no drugs and they're not going to be able to get them. They're just, you have to stop them, forcibly stop them from doing it because they can't stop it with their own self-control. So you have to stop them forcibly. So by taking a Baal Lashon Hara out of the camp, he has no one to talk to. He's not going to talk Lashon Hara if he's not going to talk to, right? So just to get the person going, that's like the only, it's not normally the method we employ. A better method is stay in the camp, have people to talk to, and give you wake-up signs, and give you, that would be more like akin to Malchus. You give the house, they ultimately destroy the house. Their clothing, you make them feel uncomfortable, things like that, you make them realize there are consequences, negative consequences to their talking. But ultimately, if it doesn't work, it's not, you can't, enough wake-up signs, it's not happening, we have to forcibly stop the person. Okay? So that sounds reasonable.
It's like the Rambam method of...
Yes.
Have a clean break or something.
Yeah, like the opposite extreme, right? Like a person who's got a problem in an area, so there's a method, an illness. Like the normal way to deal with a person with a mita is to try to work on it slowly and to try to get towards the middle. But if a person's got an extreme where they simply can't control it, then the method is to go to the opposite extreme and to break your attachment to a particular mita. So a person's like a malchus, they're always getting angry, so they have to like go to the opposite extreme and never ever get angry, even for things which are worth getting angry for. You have to like go to totally to the opposite extreme or things like that. So yeah, it's like that type of a thing. But the problem is, like, that's hard for a person to do on their own. Here it's like society imposed it upon them. The Torah imposed it upon them through Saras. Which is arguably, perhaps, what Heather is saying, is the reason why we do impose it on him is because he's so destructive to society. Like a different Be'er Midah, maybe you'll say, look, let the person go to the opposite extreme on their own. But here, it does destroy the fabric of society, and therefore we have to get him out of there. And force him to do tshuva. If he's not willing to do tshuva through a more subtle means, then we have to, you know, pull out a bigger method of... Good?
Okay. Rabbi?
Yes?
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So I understand what you're saying in terms of, like, how he's a danger to society, and, like, you kind of compared it to, like, someone going to rehab or whatever.
Right.
But I feel like it's a little bit different, and it would... I don't know, I feel like it's more of like kind of like a prison type of thing, because when a person goes to, like, let's say rehab or something, they're having classes, they're learning about why they're doing is wrong and how to be more functional. But if a person's just on his own and isolated, I feel like they're not going to come to that realization of like, oh, this is what I'm doing wrong, this is how I could change. It seems more of like a prison where, like, you're kind of just like, you have your danger to society, so you have to be separated and not near.
Right, okay. Okay, so a good question. I'd say two things. One thing is, first of all, the whole process from beginning to end is under the auspices of the Kohen, who is a teacher. They come on by the teachers in society. And he basically, from the beginning, he doesn't just get sent out on day one. There's a whole, like, three-week process, or there's a process of basically visiting him, checking how his plague is, if it's spreading or whatever, and he's sent out by the Kohen. So arguably, the Kohen is going to be guiding him and advising him, as necessary. And he visits him after a week and sees if it gets better. You know, like, it is under the guidance of a Kohen, so... You know, there is a value to the solitude, but then, yes, there is an interaction on the part of the Kohen. And secondly, we'll get to... You're asking a good question nonetheless, and I think hopefully it'll become clear as we proceed a little further. Okay? But...
Yeah.
Okay, good. Hey. Okay. So, then what happens? We're talking about Saras. Yeah. So the question is, so then what happens? So they go out of the camp. Okay, they're talking Lashon Hara. Just a quick recap. Person talks Lashon Hara. Ultimately, they get sent out of the camp. They can't do teshuva on their own. They're talking Lashon Hara. So the Torah sends them out of the camp, and they simply can't talk Lashon Hara because there's no one to talk Lashon Hara to. So then what happens? So then they stay out of the camp for how long?
A week.
Okay. Sounds that way. A week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. There are periods of weeks. But ultimately, they stay there until it gets better. Okay? It could be indefinite. It's not... There's no, like, idea. You still have the tzaras, but you're going to come back anyways because, hey, it's really been a long time. There's nothing like that. They get back when it goes away. The Kohen determines that it goes away. So... Arguably, when does it go away? Well, if it's a nes from Hashem that he gives this thing, it's when Hashem sees fit to remove it. You'd think, arguably, when the person takes the message, internalizes the message, right? Or something like that, right? I mean, we don't know exactly. But you'd think this is designed to help the person do teshuvah. When they do teshuvah, then if they're healed, the tzaraas will go away. They're internally healed, philosophically healed. Then they become physically ill, the tzaraas goes away, and then you think they come back in the camp and get back to life. Okay. But that's not quite how it happens. And that's really what I want to talk about. Okay. What happens is, the way they come back is almost in stages. Okay. It's not, you may not notice this if you don't read the psukim very carefully, because it's like a big blur. But what happens is, there are two stages. Okay. Stage one is the calling comes to the person. Okay, it's the beginning of the tzaraas. And he basically goes out to the camp and he sees that the tzaraas has gone away. Okay? And then the Kohen does is he does this whole bird service. Okay? I'll talk about it in detail. He takes two birds, dips them in the blood, and sends one away. And we'll talk about that in a second, what exactly the details. But he does this whole avodah with the birds. Okay? And then after he does this detailed thing with the birds, then he sprinkles from the blood of the birds on the person, and then the person washes their clothing, and they shave their hair, and they come back into the camp. But they come back into the camp, but they still are prohibited. The pasuk says, "V'yasha mechutzal Allah shivas yom." They stay out of their tent for 7 days, okay? Which they say that's chazal adorish, means he's prohibited from sexual relations. Okay, for the week. Okay, which is the drasha. I mean, the way the Torah describes it, he's out of his tent for 7 days. Okay. And then, on the seventh day, that's for 7 days, so he's like back in the camp, but not quite. Okay? And then, on the seventh day, he shaves all his hair, his entire body, everything. And then, he goes in the mikvah. And then, on the eighth day, he brings various karbanos. And then, he's tar. Then he has kapara, he's fully forgiven, atoned, everything. Okay, so you have, again, you have the process of healing or of kapara takes place in these like two stages, where the first the Kohen goes out to them, they do this whole bird thing. Again, I'll talk more in detail about that in a little bit. They do this whole bird thing. After that, they come into the camp in a halfway type of a way, where they're in but they're not fully in. They wait 7 days. And then after the 7 days, they go on the mikvah again and bring harbanos, and then they're fully back to, So ultimately, what I'd like to understand, and we have to look into it a little bit more, is what's this idea, this deal of this two-step recovery, if you will, this two-step process. It doesn't happen in one shot. But why? What's the point of this whole bird thing? Okay? Fine. So we have to look a little more into the bird thing, obviously. And thankfully, we have Rashi, who gives us a little bit of insight into what's going on there. Okay, everyone with me? Okay. So what does he do? So it says, so this is, I guess, in Pasuk Dalet, if you want to follow, but I'll translate it. It's fine. It's Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Dalet, if you want, you can grab that one. Vayikra Yudalet Dalet. So it says, Vitziva HaKohen, and the Kohen commands him, V'lokach lamitayar shtei tziporim chayas kataros. And you take two birds, two living tahar birds, the Eitz Erez and cedar wood, Ushni Solas, and it's like wool which is colored, like some crimson colored wool, the Azov, and a hyssop, some sort of a hyssop branch or something like that, a reed. Okay? You guys, you found it? Okay? So you take these various things. Two birds, cedar wood, string colored crimson, red, and then hyssop. And then you take the kohen, take the tzibur kohen, shachar es, and he slaughters one of the birds. El klicher salmayim chayim. Above a cup, a vessel, an earthenware vessel, which contains mayim chayim, like pure water, and the blood, I guess, drips into this water. Okay? Fine. And then you take the living bird, and the cedar wood, and the string, and the, you know, the wool swollen string, and the hyssop, and you dip them all, the living bird included, into this water. Okay? And then you sprinkle, using these, I guess, whatever, reeds, you sprinkle on this guy 7 times, and that somehow purifies him. And then you send away the other bird, the living bird, onto the field, like, let it go free. Okay? And then he washes himself, and he shaves his whole body and all that. Okay? And then he comes back to the camp. Okay? So strange, right? Pretty strange. It's not the ordinary carbon or anything like that, right? I mean, whatever. I mean, mythic carbonas are also a little strange, but this is like a different paradigm, right? Okay. So what's the deal with these things, these entities, right? So Rashi on Pasuk Dalet, he says, Tehoros, the second Rashi there on Pasuk Dalet, 4, it says, Pradlo of Tamfan. Lefisha negoim ba'al on Lashon Hara. Since the plagues come on Lashon Hara, Shu Maisa Pit Pute Dvarim. That's an action of, like, tweeting. Tweet, 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 tweet. So Pit Put is like tweeting. Birds, it's like from a person who's like chatterbox, chattering. Yafika Huskul Tarasu Tsiparim. So therefore he uses birds, Shemifat Fim Tamid Bit Tiftsuf Kol. That they're always tweeting. So it's like the birds were reminiscent of his problem, right? Namely, that he's chattering. Okay? Fine. So that's why we take birds. Okay? Ve'etz erez, when cedar wood, l'fishan agon bal gasa ruach. So plagues come for arrogance. Okay? So arguably there's a connection between arrogance and lashon hara. Lashon hara is like some sort of exerting your control over the world. There's like psukim which indicate that kind of a thing, that you feel like invincible, and with your words you have power to undermine other people, and you have some sort of control. So there's like an arrogance. You're putting yourself above other people, undermining them, raising yourself up. So plagues come for gossip, arrogance, and eitz erez is like the tallest trees in the field, the cedars, right? Those are like the most powerful, strongest, tall trees. V'shnitol as ve'ezov. So then he takes this wool, crimson colored wool, and Azov, which is hyssop, mataka nasav yishrape. What's his remedy to heal? Yashbil atzmo b'gamigai vaso. He should lower himself from his arrogance. Kitolas ve'ezov. Like a tolas is like a worm. It's a play on words. Tolas shani is like, shni tolas is a string of crimson. Tolas is like crimson, I think. It's red. But tolas also can mean like a worm. So it means he's to lower himself like a worm, and like Azov, like hyssop. Apparently hyssop is like some lowly type of reed, or I don't know. So basically, he's taking an instance, a sample of a high entity, a cedar tree, and low things which will bring to mind lowliness, indicating, pointing to him, if you want to heal yourself, you have to lower yourself from your arrogance. Stop being like a cedar tree, and start being like a worm, and like a, you know, like a hyssop. Okay? Yes.
If you want to, I mean, didn't he already, if he's doing that?
I know, that's the problem. Yeah, right, that's the question. I thought he already did. Presumably, he already did his tshuva, because his teras went away. So now we're telling him, oh yeah, by the way, birds, lashon hara, lower yourself. Wasn't that, presumably that's what made the teras go away, right? This is when it goes away. This isn't what happens when on day one, when he goes out into the field. This you'd think would be, like as Miriam's question, I guess, was, you'd think this would be on day one. Right? Give him this message on the first day. Send him out to the field and bring the birds. Right? But that's not quite what happens. It's like he already goes out there for the whole, however long it is, indefinitely almost. Right? It's till it goes away. Finally goes away. Now you give him the message? Isn't this a little late in the game? And then he waits 7 days in the town, separated from his house, from his wife, whatever. Right? And then after that he brings the carbon. And he's pure, like, what's the deal? Okay? So that's basically what I got here.
I find that so strange. Like, if this is, he needs to have some kind of, like, process to undergo before he can take the first step back inside the camp.
Okay.
Then the process is still going to have some message that's very related.
Okay.
You know, that's containing the, even if it's true, even if he already is, like, on his way to Teshuvah, it's still whatever kind of process you're going to put him through to, like, you know, bring him over that threshold of, like, okay, you can come back into the camp today, then still it's going to need to contain, like, some kind of related message to what.
Okay. But, know, like,
the message is going to be lasting for him. That's going to.
Okay. But you have this gap, though. Like, you could have just done this and brought him into the camp. You know?
Well,
you have this thing.
Give him a chance to, you know, think about things.
Okay. Okay, but I wouldn't have thought about things for the time he was out of the camp.
Yeah, but isn't this the process that he needs to go through in order to take the halfway entrance?
Yes. So again, so why are you saying you need the halfway?
You're not letting, you're making him go through a process of, like, Tahorah before you're going to let him back in at all.
Right.
Even if it's like a halfway in.
Yes.
And I'm just saying that certainly what the message here is needs to be described better than I'm describing right now, but there's still going to have to be some kind of, like, Tahara process for him, and it's not strange to me that it's containing the message that's related to what his behaviors were.
Right, I hear you, but I'm asking, so why is it taking place in two stages? Why not just give him the message and let him come in? Or, as Miriam was saying, give him the message before he starts this whole, his original thing. Right? Like, what you do originally is you send them out, basically.
Right. I mean, you have to say, right, that this first process just isn't adequate, right? This is not enough. Whatever his original fate was, and the, I mean, he did enough tshuva that the tzaras went away, but that, you have to say that that's not enough.
Okay, good.
For him to be able to re-enter society fully, right?
Right. Okay, that's good stuff. Yes, apparently it is necessary, but not sufficient. And somehow this pops it off.
But taking a little bit of a jump, the way that he's able to come back into the camp, but, like, not re-enter his home.
Yeah.
I feel like that might be something along the lines of, should I not talk about that right now? But I think it might be something along the lines of, like, he's allowed to be part of, like, general society, but it's, like, he's not that likely to speak Lashon Hara with just generals. It's more the people that you're close with, the people who you see all the time.
Right.
So maybe, like, he may be ready to re-enter, like, general, the community, but not necessarily, like, he's a threat to the people around him, you know, like, that he's going to infect them. So, something like that, maybe?
I was going to say, and together with that, you know, when a person has, like, the security and the comfort of their home, like, that, I think, can inflate a person's sense of, like, self and security, and I think, like, Lashon Hara comes out of those types of, of characteristics. So by putting the person, like, ill at ease where they're not really secure and comfortable, they can't really feel, like, elevated, like, the, you know, like, they can be in society, but they're, like, I wouldn't exactly say, like, a probation, but sort of, like, they're back in the situation that they were speaking Lashon Hara in, but they don't have, like, the grounding from which they were able to say it. So they could have, not like a trial period, but, like, be in the society but don't have, like, the comfort and the strength that will allow you to do it, so that they could be in society and have, like, practice week of not speaking. Like, if they were taken out, like you said, the Rambam said they were taken out to prevent speaking Lashon Hara, now they can be back in speaking Lashon Hara, but there's a preventative measure to stop them so they could have, like, a trial run or something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Out, but they won't, you know, just don't do it, you know, because they cannot. you know, with all the warning signs and everything that came on the walls and the clothes and things like that, they never did shiva.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Okay, any other thoughts? What are you saying? Good. You're saying good.
It's interesting that the person has to bring the korbanos all the way at the end. Like, that's like the final, before they can really go back in society. So they go into the mikvah and then they do the korbanos and then they're really done.
Right. It's true.
Obviously, what's gonna?
There's no technical requirement like that of them seeing who they harmed, but I hear what you're saying. You're saying it kind of gives them a perspective to observe without quite being in. Right?
Right.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, so let me elaborate a little bit, but I'm taking the approach that you guys are suggesting. Basically, the person needs healing, okay? Now, they're not really, as we said before, they're not ready to do teshuva because they're so rooted in their Lashon Hara that they simply can't stop. And you've given them messages with the clothing and the house and all that, and they haven't done teshuva, so they're not ready to hear the message, okay? So, arguably, the tzaras, the first version, sending him out of the camp, is basically like almost breaking the addiction, okay? Preventing them from speaking, humbling them by being alone and losing all their, you know. Basically, that's like I likened it to like a rehab thing. It's like you're forcibly breaking their addiction, okay? You're stopping them from talking Lashon Hara because you're stopping them from talking. It's an extreme measure. But that's not teshuva. Teshuva isn't just extreme measure, extreme removal. Teshuva is like putting you back on a good path. And this is an extreme, which is equally not a reasonable life. I mean, a person should be a hermit. That's no way to live. A person shouldn't have no friends, no family, and just be alone. That's not a normal way to live. That's kind of what Miriam's kind of point is. It's like jail isn't the way of life. That's not an ideal. But it's not an ideal, and the Torah knows it's not an ideal, and you don't just put a person in that and then say, okay, now you're better. You can't get better like that. That's not a getting better. Like, and I would think rehab doesn't get a person better. Rehab is a first step to stabilize the person, to allow them to begin a process of getting better in a more normal type of a situation. So, it goes away when the person is like, there's a strong, like, addiction, if you will, to the Lashon Hara, and to the arrogance, and the going out of the camp is attempting to break that, okay? To remove the energies from that type of a speech. But again, it can only do it in an extreme way. It was all types of speech. It's going to force them to be inward, to be thoughtful and all that. But it's too extreme. But it will accomplish its task, at least for the short term, of totally removing the energy and forcing it to go elsewhere. Okay? But then what you have to do, if you just put the person back after that, they're just likely going to snap right back to their old way. Because you've put them in like this surreal type of a situation. And yeah, they haven't spoken Lashon Hara because they haven't had any choices. They haven't had any battles with speaking Lashon Hara. They haven't had any capacity, any ability. It's just they're not doing it because they can't. Right? But that's not really going to heal the person. And you see, it's interesting, we don't necessarily even do any, we don't do the bird thing beforehand. Because they're not ready to hear the bird thing. The goal of this time is not to give them a conscious lesson as much as to extricate them from their evil ways. Okay? But now that they are extricated from those ways, and now they're able to, their energy is removed, now we're ready to give to talk to them on a more mature level, to give them content, to teach them ideas, to instruct them a proper way to live going forward. And now we give them a week where they're in the camp but not in the camp. You need this like middle ground where if they're totally back to normal, then they're just going to go back. But at the same time, if they're out of the camp, they're not able to acclimate. Not able to try to, be in society and try to practice and to think and to interact with people in a way with a different type of a perspective. Now that they've broken their addiction to Lashon Hara, now they're ready to think. So you can't even think when you're addicted. It's like a person who's addicted, let's say they have a drug addiction. You can't have a conversation with them about why it's not good. It's just they're too, their energies are too, they can't have an open-minded conversation. They're too hooked. So now you allow them to be able to have a conversation. Now you start the lesson. Now you're ready to start the lesson. And you do this avodah of the birds, and we'll get into the particulars in a moment. You want to give, now you teach them. And the birds are bringing to mind, as Rashi says, the birds, the tweeting, and Lashon Hara, and the arrogance, and the lowliness, and you're setting them on a path of instructing them, which they hopefully now for this week, they'll be involved in society in a partial way, and they'll internalize it, and they'll practice, and they'll, hopefully not start on the path of Lashon Hara. If it comes back, then they're going to have to go back out again. It's not like all over. It could come back at any point, and they're back out. So hopefully the week will work to enable them to be in society partially, to internalize the lessons, and then they're ready to now approach, to go before God, and truly attain the full kapara, which is, typically karban is the culmination of prostitute kapara. It's a good question you're asking, Grace, why carbon? But that's a very common method of a person who sins. You go before God, you approach God, you acknowledge your sin, you bring a sin offering, you recognize sin is harmful, it leads you to a path of destruction, and you come before God and try to establish a new path for yourself. So that you have, like, by carbon, you have a Zav and a Zava and a Yoledes and a Mitzora and a Nazir. There's a lot of people. The model of having a carbon as the end of the thing is like a common method. It's like going to the Beis HaMikdash, being before God, the Kohanim instructing you, the whole educational experience of having a carbon in the Beis HaMikdash and the Kohanim is the final step of setting you on the correct path. There's more to say about that, I'm sure, but that's not what's unique here. The carbon is ordinary. What's unique here is this week in the bird. The birds isn't in the Beis HaMikdash. It's not like an ordinary thing. Okay. So what is this thing? Okay, what are we? Okay, I'll pause for a minute, but that we have to go into a little bit more. In specific, is what is the content that we're trying to give him through this strange bird service? Okay, is there a question before we go into that? Okay. So one message. It seems like there's two messages, right? One is the birds, the tweeting. Something about the tweeting, Lashon Hara, and the other is the arrogance. Right? Arrogance, lower yourself. Right? Which is interesting, right? Why? How would you put those two together? How would you, like, what's the, is it because of Lashon Hara or is it because of arrogance? Or how would you, before we get to what particulars are, but which one is it? Like, what's the connection? Is there, do they somehow, some? Are they two parts of one type of a thing somehow, or?
always thought that it was like a certain type of arrogance that allows a person to speak Lashon Hara.
Okay.
But when you a person would look at themselves more honestly, it really is actually a insecurity, not arrogance.
Okay.
So the arrogance is trying to cover for their insecurities.
Okay. Okay. Just in general what arrogance is, or in specific Lashon Hara kind?
No, Lashon Hara.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. I never thought about arrogance itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. It's not so easy to hear everyone else on the phone, so I'm sorry to confess, but...
It's okay.
I guess you might be able to say that, like, the way that you relate to speech when you're a person who speaks Lashon Hara, is maybe caused by the arrogance.
Okay.
If you talk in, like, a tweeting way, maybe it's because you're arrogant.
Right. Okay.
What'd you say? You're talking like the what?
The tweeting way because you're arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay, I'm thinking something like that. I mean, maybe, Rachel, you're going deeper than I'm thinking more surface, which is something in line with what Tamara's saying, and I'm sure there's more depth to it. But I think that, like, the symptom is that you're tweeting, is the Lashon Hara, the speech. But arguably that's caused by an underlying cause. Your problem isn't just the tweeting, there's an underlying mida. Like, Lashon Hara isn't the character trait. It's not a mida. It's an action, which is expressive of a character trait. And a character trait of an arrogance enables, or I don't know if it always enables, but in your case, that's like to work on it, you have to work on both. The action which you're doing, that which you're addicted to, that which your sin is, and then also on the underlying character trait. It's like you can't deal with an action which you're doing if you don't address an underlying mida, which is the cause of it, because it's like you're going to miss. You're not. It's like you're dealing with a symptom and not dealing with the cause. You know. So you're going to take. You have some sort of a disease, and you keep taking Tylenol, and it'll stop the pain. Well, you're not dealing with the problem. You got a problem here. You got to figure out what the problem is. So, at the same time, like you do have to deal with the Lashon Hara. That is part of what you have to work on your arrogance. But insofar as it's connected to your Lashon Hara, like arrogance is a very broad type of thing to work on. It's like your goal, your problem in particular, is that you're talking Lashon Hara, but at the same time it's connected up with a character trait. And you're not necessarily going to solve your arrogance problem. That's like a lifelong type of, it involves many, many things. But here it's like the particular symptom which is being expressed is the Lashon Hara, but at the same time your analysis of it and you're trying to overcome it have to involve your arrogance and lowering yourself and that type of process. You know what I mean? So it's like you have to point both of those out to him. What the problem is in Lashon Hara, and what the area, the ballpark of the cause is. Now, presumably, there's a whole layer of analysis. What's the cause of his arrogance? That's a deeper analysis. Maybe there are various causes. I'm not really, various types of arrogance or whatever. But that's like the ballpark where you put it. Okay. Okay. So, the birds thing is interesting. The arrogance part is, look, you're saying is like you feel like a cedar tree and you have to lower yourself and make yourself like these lower things. You know, like an arrogant person feels like they're at the top of the world, but more realistically, they're very lowly, as any person is very lowly. They only one small person in a big world. So that's like kind of the message you're trying to show. Like, you think you're all this, but at the same time, you're really much less. So like by, I guess, somehow involving those two things, you're trying to bring to the person's mind's eye that their arrogance is an illusion. Right? And the more realistic way that they may identify themselves with a cedar tree, but in more truth, they should be more looking at themselves more as the worms and as the, so. Okay. But now the birds is interesting. It's interesting is that you have these two birds. Okay? You have these two birds, and one of them you kill, drop its blood into a earthenware vessel which contains pure water, right? And then the other one you dip into it and then you send the other bird away, right? So, could we say anything about that? It's like, okay, I understand. Birds, Lashon Hara. Tweet, 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 tweet. Okay, fine.
I like they teach someone the effects of Lashon Hara, right? You like break a pillow and the feathers scatter everywhere. And like when she said something, it's like
it gets out.
It's out, and you can't.
Okay. Okay.
You can't recollect it or something like that.
Okay, you're not sending the bird away, man. Okay. So I was thinking similar to Naomi's thing, that, see, here's the thing. The birds are tweeting, tweet, 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 bad. But for this week or month or however long he was out of the camp, we gave him a message which was not fully correct. The message was stop talking. Don't say a word. Don't talk to anyone, right? That's what he felt. That's not true. It's not really the Torah's attitude. Okay, just silence. That's like maybe the religions of like, I don't know, monks or something who don't say anything. That's like, but that's not an idea, never talk. Talk, there's two types of talk. There are two types of birds. There's talk which will lead to your death, to your philosophical death, to your impacting, dirtying other pure people and pure things. And then there's a type of a bird which could soar. And it could arrive and go free. And you're a type of speech which you could reach the highest heights through speech. I mean, speech in the words of Chachmah, how's a person supposed to grow if they're not able to speak? And speech is a great vehicle of the highest types of activities of the human being, of davening, of learning, working on oneself. I mean, speech of chesed, I mean, speech is, it could be great. So the message we're saying is that there's the birds are representing speech. And we've previously cut you off from speech. But now we're showing you there's two type paths of speech in front of you. There's the path of speech which leads to death. There's the bird which is killed, whose blood dirties the pure water, and the speech of Lashon Hara dirties other pure people and affects the people who listen to Lashon Hara, and it's very harmful. And it's ultimately leads to your downfall in the society as a whole downfall. And that's what we're trying to show him. If you follow that bird, is a type of a bird which is evil, corrupt, it leads to death. Stay away from that. But don't say, therefore, I'm not going to speak. That's like, you might think, oh, my speaking got me into this problem. I just got to shut my mouth and never say a word. That might be a reaction which a person's going to have after all this torturous time of being away and all that. No. Then you show him, but then there's another bird which goes free, flies free, and you go out and fly and speak and tweet and whatever, right? So that's the message. The message is, go and speak, recognizing the fact that you still have, maybe it's like you're dipping the good bird into the blood of the old one, I guess that's what Naomi was trying to say. You are dirtied by your previous, like, you don't forget your past, and don't forget that you should be that other bird, but remember that you still have the other bird's blood on your wings or whatever. It's not, know that there is this part of you which is drawn towards that, but at the same time you could fly, and you should be able to. We're trying to show him a path towards being able to remove himself from the negative speech and develop a life built around a positive approach towards speaking. And the way in doing that involves lowering yourself, you know, recognizing other people and all that. You know? So that's like, that's a message which he's not ready for previously. Because that's already... Once is that's like kind of the thing. It's the opposite extreme. You gotta have him go to the opposite extreme. But now you're ready to give him the true message of Torah, which is more a middle path type of message. And a middle path type of message is the middle path in general. Sometimes you want to act in one extreme. Sometimes you want to act in the other extreme. In any midah, there's times for each. So you want to show him speech. don't cut that off. This is the message, the more mature message, which he's ready to hear now, is there's two kinds of speech, and there's good ones and there's bad ones, and now control yourself. Good? Question? Yes?
Yeah, I'm not.
Okay, yes.
So what, can you say again what
Rashi says about tweeting? Yes, he says that, since the plagues come on Lashon Hara, which is an action of pitpute dvarim, it's like a chattering of words, therefore, for his taira, he needs birds which are constantly chattering with their tzif-tzif of call. They're like tweeting sounds.
Okay,
and then it says about the cedar. You want to hear that also or not?
No, just the tweeting.
Just the tweeting,
the question
yeah.
is, so from what you're saying, it sounds like the tweeting corresponds to speech,
yes.
more generally.
Right.
It sounds from Rashi, it's Rav Lashon Hara. It's like really specifically kind of a certain kind of speech.
It comes again. What are you saying? I'm saying. What are you? Does it sound like it's saying? I'm saying it comes from a certain type of speech, but it's in the class of things of speech. So the birds are a show bringing up to mind the idea of the speaking. Of the, I mean, I guess it's like a lot of speaking. I mean, I guess mitzatim tamid. I guess it's like a lot of tweeting. Like birds are. Like very like regularly tweeting and making noises or whatever, and that's part of like generally the Baal Lashon Hara is a big mouth. He's like speaking a lot, but I mean maybe it's in that type of speech. But then I think, but the message though, I mean he's just talking about he's not getting into the two birds and all that. He's just saying is what birds are. What's the relevance of birds? I think maybe if you have birds, maybe he's just trying to deal with the fact like how's a bird supposed to remind you of this. But, like, if you think of birds, birds are tweeting and talking. That kind of is reminiscent of, like, you see Twitter. It's like, you know.
Around
whatever.
That?
Yeah.
It's like that expression, I know they say it a lot in Great Neck and stuff, they'll say, like, chirping. Like, they mean, like, you're talking a lot.
Oh, really? Chirping?
Like that, yeah. So, like, I know they use that as an expression a lot.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Chirping. Yeah. To what? To a person who gossips a lot or just a person who has, keeps talking? Speaking.
For someone who's just, like, kind of going on and on,
just,
like, rambling.
Chirping, I understand. Right. I wonder also that thing, don't they say, like, a little birdie told me or something?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know if that's, like, related to that, but I wonder, like, birds are, like, this idea of, like, always talking and telling me. But it could be, you go on the street, like, birds are, like, if you were annoyed by the sound of birds, it would be drive you crazy.
Right.
Most people aren't. They're nice sounding. But, like, there are birds, some of them will not keep talking, like, nonstop. So it could be it just brings to mind that idea of what you were doing. But then I'm saying, even though you bring that to mind, but then you don't want the person to think, don't do that. A person who could talk a lot could be very productive. It's just they have to direct what they're talking about and how they're saying it, and they have to be a thoughtful speaking. But don't cut out speaking. That's not the message. That's my point. Message is not shut your mouth. That's not a message. That might be a message people would say to a person. A teacher might tell a student that. But that's not really the message. It's say productive things. Think before you speak and say things which are good to say. You know, it's just hard to tell that. That's a hard message. The teacher tells them, shut your mouth, because the kid's not going to hear that or whatever. You have to, in a certain sense, that's true. That's what I'm saying. First shut your mouth, then you're ready to, you know. It's kind of interesting. I wonder if this is like forward thinking in terms of that idea of rehab and like these idea of these 12-step programs and all the different things. It's like, Torah is very much, I think, in other instances also. I've seen this in, like, the idea of a sinful, a killer who kills by accident. Torah has different models of recovery from different character traits. And, like, nowadays it's a big thing of, like, 12-step program, this, that, the other thing. But I remember when I was, I recently read that, the book of, or some of it, about that 12-step, you know, the big book, which is, like, the Bible of, like, AA and whatever. And, like, I thought a lot of the ideas, not 100%, but a lot of ideas were, like, similar to the Torah's idea of Naziris, of a Nazir and how a Nazir recovers. I just thought it's interesting. The Torah is, like, maybe ahead of its time so far as the concept and the challenges of recovery and of overcoming self-help and all that type of stuff. That's, like, a modern thing of recent. of like these different self-help types of things, but it's like the Torah is all about this and has different remedies for different people with all different types of problems, and a lot of insights that, you know, I'm sure you could glean from it, and, you know, probably would be helpful towards, you know, a lot of their recoveries. Yeah. Yeah.
So, my question was, we were talking about this on Shabbos, and was this something that happens a lot? Because we were trying to figure out, yeah, like, how it would be that a young person who's growing up, like, it seemed like everyone would at least sometimes, I mean, I don't even know how you could raise a person who would not do this at some point. I mean, it really helps a lot if the society is not like that and it's found. Right. I think that's a huge help.
Right.
Joyce, it wasn't one, like, maybe Elisha's servant was one time.
Gehazi, Elisha's servant.
That something could just, like, happen. I mean, obviously it happened to Miriam. We're like, is this part of, like, the growing process that everybody goes through this at some point?
Right.
Or is it, like, very rare?
Yeah, so I think my impression is, and I think I got this in the Ramban somewhere, is that this is the way I enter. I don't know, based on Ramban, but maybe this is my own take, is that if the society at large is involved in Lashon Hara, what are you going to get everyone to be? Well, there's no room out of the camp for everybody. Where's everyone going to be? They're going to be alone. There's no one in the camp. So it's like, if you have a society which is not involved in Lashon Hara, which, how could you have such a thing? But you could have such a thing, a high-level society, and you have individuals who are sinful and they fall prey to this type of a thing, then I see this could be, then there's a hashgacha to Klal Yisrael. That's why I think the Ramban says it's only for Klal Yisrael when we're in Eretz Yisrael in like a high level society, and there are individuals who step out of line who have the potential to undermine further there, that it could become like a disease which could spread amongst the society. Then Hashem gives them a remedy which will help them do teshuva, and the rest of society is in target, and then they're individuals who've got problems who the Torah, you know, will help out. But in the other one says, like, when we're not at the proper level, it's not, no one's going to do tshuva from it. It's not reasonable to do tshuva. There's no ideal of how to not talk Lashon Hara. It's just part of the whole culture. The whole culture is like that. You can't, it's for individuals in a society which is otherwise at a high level, an individual who's got a problem, to help them. And that's why when we're no longer at that kind of a level, then the whole thing doesn't, you know, it's not going to work. So now it's just going to be giving people leprosy. What's wrong? What's the point of that? It's not going to work. It works because there's a society valuation of good speech, and this person has got an issue.
When did it stop? Like, when did we stop having it?
I don't know. I think some say maybe. It's not clear. I mean, I saw someone say that it could even play out of this, but I think the simple shot is that we lost the base of Mikdash, we don't have the Sanhedrin, something like that. I think it's machlokas. It's not clear when it's not. But there's a Ramban who talks about it. I forget when he says, but I think he says when it's Klal Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. And he addresses this thing, that the level of society has to be on. I don't remember how exactly he says it.
Ramban here?
Ramban on one of the, I forget which one. There's one Ramban in this parsha, in Northern Tezriya, or Mitzvah, who he goes at length about Tzaraas. If you find that one, if you just kind of skim through pages for a long Ramban, that's it, I think. You know.
And do the Mitzvahs talk to each other?
That's an interesting question. On the surface, it sounds like Bad Dad Yeshiv, he's alone. But if you look into the halachos, he really, it's a little bothersome. We couldn't figure this out. We learned this again a little bit. He really goes outside of any walled cities, but it seems like he's allowed to go into a city, not a walled city, which, I don't know, seems to be against this whole idea, but I don't know. The plain shot on the pasuk, he's alone. People don't talk to him, he's whatever. I don't know if he's never allowed to talk to anyone. I'm not sure about that. That was this Haftorah. That's what the Kira is referring to.
Okay.
Yeah, it seems that. Yeah.
So that was
Gehazi? Yeah. And the Chazal, it's not clear that it was Gehazi. The Chazal say that it was Gehazi. Yeah. Good? Yeah. Any other questions? Okay. Take care, Miriam. Take care. Take care, Tamara and Naomi. Okay.